Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The thing that's astounding to me and the thing that's being told us in this passage is that he chose to put himself through the whole human experience. See, that's the amazing thing. He put himself. Nobody forced him to do this. The terms were all his own terms. He could do it any way he wanted. But he chose to put himself through the whole human experience.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues our Christmas series. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 1, verse 14, in a message titled, "The Word Became Flesh." Now, here's Pastor Brian.
So here we are, verse 14. "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, as of the only begotten," or as of the only Son of God, "full of grace and truth." I've said this before, and this I believe to be the case, that search high and low, there's nowhere in history that you are going to find a more profound statement than the one that's stated here in the 14th verse. It's just, when you stop and think about it, when you realize what this is saying, because, of course, verse 1 tells us that the Word was with God and the Word was God, and then verse 14 tells us that the Word became flesh. So what we're being told is that God became a human being. God became a man. And so this is the time of the year, of course, where we would probably spend the most time thinking about those things, pondering those things. And these are things really that are, you know, at the end of the day, these things are beyond our ability to really fully comprehend. We could never grasp this, but it's always good to think on it. It's always good to try at least to go as deep as we can, and this is a great time to do that at Christmas time. So that's what we're going to do here. We're going to take this 14th verse today, and we're going to do that very thing. We're going to look at three things. The Word became flesh. We're going to look at, secondly, we beheld his glory, John's statement there. And then thirdly, at him being full of grace and truth. So let's begin with the first point. The Word became flesh. Now, the Word became flesh. So again, we're talking about God taking a human form to himself. And I was thinking of the ways that God could have done this. Now, in the Old Testament, we have, on several occasions, we have God manifesting himself in human form. And we don't really know exactly how that happened. How, you know, God just spoke some sort of a body into existence that he could inhabit for the purpose of revealing himself to people. The process by which that took place, we're never told. We just find in various places in the Old Testament that God is there and he is in the form of a man. I think of the story of Jacob who's wrestling with the angel. And it's clear as you read the passage there that the angel is a man. And then it becomes clear that the angel is not only a man, but the angel is God. Jacob says at the end of it, "I have seen God face to face." So this is one of the ways that God revealed himself during the Old Testament period. He would just simply appear in the form of a man. But then there's also, I think, is another possibility what God could have done. He could have just gone back and did what he did originally. Originally with Adam, you remember what he did. He took and he formed man from the dust of the earth, and then he breathed breath into that form, and Adam became a living soul. And so if you think about it, you know, God could have said, okay, I'm God the Father, you know, I'm going to send you, Jesus, my son, I'm going to send you to the earth, and we're going to do it like we did with Adam. So in both cases, Had God chosen to do that, he would have come into the world as a fully matured human being. He would not have gone through any of the process that everybody else went through, with the exception of Adam and Eve. But the thing that's astounding to me, and the thing that's being told us in this passage, is that he chose to put himself through the whole human experience. See, that's the amazing thing. He put himself. Nobody forced him to do this. The terms were all his own terms. He could do it any way he wanted. But he chose to put himself through the whole human experience. And so there, as we would start in that process, there he is in embryonic form. He's an embryo in the womb of this young woman, Mary. And he grows and develops in the womb. He comes to being a fully developed babe in the womb. And now, just like every other child that has been in that position, he's going to come forth from the womb. So he's going to experience the whole thing. And then as he comes forth from the womb, he comes to that place of complete vulnerability and total dependence on somebody else. You know, sometimes our thinking about Jesus is a little bit off. We sometimes think of him like, like maybe Superman was being born or something like that, you know? So, well, yeah, he was born and he was a baby, but, you know, he didn't really need to be taken care of. They could have just left him and he would have been fine, you know, because he was God. But what we don't realize is his divinity, his deity, he set those things aside in the sense that he did not depend on those things. So Jesus was completely dependent on his parents to take care of him. He was totally vulnerable, and he was completely dependent on them, just like all of us were when we were born, and all of our children were when they were born. If it weren't for us giving them the love and the care and all that they needed, they would have never made it. And that's the exact position that Jesus put himself into as well. And so there he is. He comes into the world. And then we find that he is taken and he's placed in a manger. Now, again, we're so far removed from this, what it was actually like. And we've got so much traditional history. We've got the little nativity scenes that we set up around the house. And, oh, they're so cute and so adorable. And, well, look at the donkey. The donkey just looks so pleasant, you know, and the animals there. And look at the nice little manger. Listen, Jesus was put in a feeding trough. He was put in a stone feeding trough that the animals would have just recently been feeding from. That was the environment. And, you know, animals are nice when they're like somebody else's problem, or, you know, when they're across that gulf and you can kind of just look at them from a distance and admire them and zoom in with your camera or whatever. But, you know, when you get up close to animals and you start, you know, they start drooling on you and, all of those unpleasant things. That was the reality of the environment that Jesus came into. So it wasn't quite as romantic as we make it. So he's put in a feeding trough, and then they have visitors. Now, I'm looking around the room, many of you ladies, I'm assuming that you've had children. Now, after you first had a baby, now I know, you know, my wife had four kids, and she wasn't really up for visitors real soon after the children were born, you know, and especially visitors that were strangers. She was just not into that at all. But suddenly, Mary's got visitors and they're strangers. They're not only strangers, but listen, they're sheep herders. They're sheep herders. And I chose that word specifically instead of shepherds because, again, in our mind, we've got this cute little picture of shepherds. Oh, they're so adorable, those shepherds. You know, just a sweet group of guys. No, it wasn't really like that at all. These are dirty, grubby guys, you know, rough, tough guys who, you know, they live out in the fields, they live with the sheep, and they're coming in. Now, you know, Mom, do you want these guys touching your baby? You know, if they say, oh, could I just hold him for a second? What are you going to say? No, let's just we'll come back later. You know, we'll do that. But this is what was happening. So these sheep herders, they come. And this is the environment that the Word, who became flesh, comes into. And then don't forget that Jesus was born into poverty. His parents were very common people, Joseph and Mary. And we know that for a fact because when the child was to be dedicated, all male children, all of the firstborn male children were to be dedicated to the Lord. And you had two options in dedicating your child. You could offer a lamb, or if you were poor, you would offer the turtle doves. And when we read the account in Luke about the dedication of Jesus and the offering of the sacrifice, we read there that it was the turtle doves that they offered. So that indicates to us that they were poor. So they were from the poorer classes. And so Jesus comes into that environment. And then he grows up in an ordinary family with younger brothers and sisters. This is his experience. And from probably about the age of 10, he would have been working alongside of his foster father, Joseph. He would have been doing that labor that Joseph was doing. Joseph was, he was a carpenter, but, you know, he was kind of like the village handyman, really, is what the word truly means. And so Jesus, from the time he was probably about 10 years old, for a period of about 20 years probably, maybe a little bit less, that's what he spent his life doing, living as an ordinary person. And then, of course, we know that when he was about 30 years of age, he would embark upon an itinerant preaching ministry that would draw tens of thousands of people to follow him. Some would deeply love and devote themselves to him. One close follower that he invested much in would betray him. One that he loved dearly would deny him. The rich and powerful would envy and hate him. The corrupt rulers of his own nation would falsely condemn him and ultimately kill him. This is everything that was involved in the Word becoming flesh. And remember, all of this was known in advance by the Lord. Of course, the Lord knew this. He knew what he was coming into. This is what was entailed with the Word becoming flesh. Now, we also read there that he became flesh, the Word became flesh, and dwelt among us. If there was anybody that could have and probably should have been disassociated or, you know, segregated from the rest of us, Jesus was that person. Because after all, he was different, right? He was sinless. He was the Son of God. He was thoroughly human, but he was still thoroughly God. So we could understand if when Jesus came into the world, okay, you know, he's coming into the world, there's an announcement, he's going to live over in this area here, we're going to put up a great fortress, it's impenetrable, nobody's going to be able to just, you know, access it, you're going to have permission, all of these kinds of things. But that's not what the text tells us. The text tells us that he dwelt among us. He pitched his tent right among us. He's right with us. Amazing. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. But then John says, and we beheld his glory. And we beheld his glory. You see, because underneath that veil of flesh was God. And so John says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And although to most it would appear that he was just another man, John said, no, we beheld his glory. Through that thin veil of the flesh, just on the other side of that, there was the glory. And John's entire gospel, as well as the other three gospels, are full of the manifestations of that glory. Let's think about a few of those things. John said, we beheld his glory. John writes about it in the second chapter. He speaks of the first miracle that Jesus performed. And maybe you remember it was there in Cana of Galilee. Jesus turns the water into wine. That was his first miracle. Some people think, well, why would Jesus do something like that as his first miracle? It's kind of strange. It almost seems just like sort of a trick rather than a miracle. But stop and think about it. No, this is a bona fide miracle. This is a miracle of creation. Jesus is exerting creative power. Only God can create things. He takes water and he turns it immediately, instantaneously into wine. He's demonstrating his glory. He's showing forth his power. And John says there, this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory. They understood in this act of turning water into wine, they understood that there's glory here. There's something here beyond anything that we know of. The word glory, it's taken from the Old Testament. The word glory means weighty. The Hebrew word is kabod, and it means something that's of weight or something that's of substance. And so the glory of God is this weighty thing, this substantive thing. And John, they see this, and his glory is manifested. They see this turning of the water into wine. And of course, remember, he did this at a wedding. He did it to bless people on their most important day. And wine was symbolic of joy. He's bringing joy into that situation. He's manifesting his glory in that. But then we think of the number of healings that the scriptures record. The Gospel of John, many healings. Matthew, Mark, Luke, the same. The blind seeing, the lame walking, the deaf hearing, the lepers are cleansed. All of these kinds of things. These were all in that category of, and we beheld his glory. As they saw these things, they were seeing things that nobody would have ever dreamed that they would see. And then there was the manifestation of his glory when he stood in the bow of the little ship on the stormy sea, and the disciples were fearful that they were going to perish in the storm, and Jesus stands and he rebukes the wind and the waves. And you remember, they all look at one another, and I think with some trepidation, and they said, who is this guy? Who could this be? He just commanded the wind to cease and the wind obeyed him. He just spoke to the sea and the sea became calm. We beheld his glory. Yes, John was there. He was beholding his glory. And then, of course, there was the feeding of those large groups of people, 5,000 on one occasion, 4,000 on another occasion. And again, we see the miraculous power. We see the creative power. We see that he's multiplying. He's creating from these things, from this meager amount that couldn't, you know, fill 10 people. He's filling the 5,000, not to mention the other thousands that would have been there who are not mentioned, because it just specifically says 5,000 men, not including women and children. And not only does he feed them, but then remember, they collected 12 baskets full of fragments after that. He manifested his glory. We beheld his glory. And then there are those accounts through the Gospels of the raising of the dead. The raising of the dead. The daughter of Jairus. The widow of Nain. Remember, Jesus and his disciples, they come upon this village of Nain. And there's a funeral procession. And here's a woman. She's a widow herself. She has no other children, and her only son has died, and they're going out to place him in the grave. And Jesus comes upon this procession. He stops. He sees the whole situation. He walks over, and he takes the young man, and he raises him up and restores him to his mother. Oh, you know, and as you're reading through the Gospels, and the writers are chronicling these things, and then they say that the people said, we have never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything like this. And people would say, God has visited his people. Yes, God had visited his people. That's what was happening. So, but then when it comes to the resurrection, remember, you have the most descriptive account of a resurrection is the resurrection of Lazarus. And you remember Jesus there. He comes to the village of Bethany, and Lazarus has died, and Martha and Mary, his sisters, they come, and they, oh, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Jesus said, you know, he's going to rise again. Oh, I know, Lord, he's going to rise in the last day. We understand that at the resurrection. And Jesus looks at Martha and says, Martha, no, you don't get it. I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection. And then he proceeds to raise Lazarus from the dead. And then the next thing you know, as you carry on into the 12th chapter, I love this because it says, and then it goes on to talk about Jesus sitting at a meal, and he's gathered together with a group. And it says, and then at the table with him also was Lazarus, who was dead. Can you imagine that? Yeah, we had dinner last night. Well, who was there? Oh, you know, there's a few people, you know, came over. And then, oh, you know, what's his name? Who was dead? Well, he was there too. That's how it was. Yeah, Lazarus, remember the guy that was dead? They put him in a tomb. He was there for 4 days. Yeah, he was at dinner. He had dinner with us last night. That's what happened. And they beheld his glory. These were the manifestations of his glory. And then, of course, the transfiguration. And this is one that the apostles themselves would later point back to. Peter, in writing his epistle, he points back. He says, we were with him on the holy mountain. We saw. We heard the voice from heaven. And there he was transfigured, and there the glory of his inner person burst through the flesh, and they saw Jesus momentarily glorified. And remember, that was Moses and Elijah appeared with him, and it was there that Peter said, oh Lord, it's good for us to be here. Let us build three tabernacles. And the voice speaks from the Father. This is my beloved Son. Hear him, the transfiguration. But then there's another manifestation of his glory. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, and they come to arrest him there, and they come and they say, we're seeking Jesus of Nazareth, this band of soldiers. And Jesus says, not, as your translation might read, Jesus says, not I am he. Jesus says, I am. That's all he said, I am. And what did they do? They went backward and they fell to the ground. He manifested his glory. That was a manifestation of his glory. John was there. He watched this band of soldiers that were coming to arrest Jesus, and he saw that they were absolutely powerless in his presence when he just simply declared, I am. And the glory, the weight of all of that crushed these men. But from the garden, Jesus went to that ultimate demonstration of glory that nobody recognized at the time, and that was the cross. You see, the cross was the great manifestation of God's glory, but at the time, nobody knew it.
And now let's join Pastor Brian and Cheryl in the studio as they share about this month's resource, a book titled, When God Became One of Us.
You know, I find myself always intrigued by this title, When God Became One of Us. And so tell me a little bit about this book that you wrote, Brian.
Well, this book is a 40-day journey through the Gospel of John. And it's in the Gospel of John that we understand more clearly than in any other gospel what we commonly refer to as the deity of Christ, meaning that Jesus Christ is God who becomes a man. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us.
And you know, something great about this is people are always asking about the deity of Christ.
Yeah.
And this really not only brings out the deity, but also the humanity of Christ.
Yeah.
And that's a question that a lot of people in the church have. And through these easy daily devotionals that probably take no longer than 10 minutes, you can grow spiritually and gain understanding.
Yeah.
Again, this month's resource is a book titled When God Became One of Us, a 40-day devotional through the Gospel of John by Pastor Brian. You can order the book When God Became One of Us by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of it, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book by Pastor Brian that takes you on a 40-day journey through the Gospel of John. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our Christmas series right here on Back to Basics. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.